I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation, to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. Shalom, and welcome to the Everlasting Nation Broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions in Hickson, Tennessee. Now here's your host, IBJM Ministries Director, John Lawrence.
Greetings, friends. This is John Lawrence, Director of Ministries here at IBJM, and your host for the program today. We have talked about many Jewish mission fields over the last few months, but today I wanted to share German-speaking fields with you. Several countries in Europe particularly that have large Jewish populations and where German is the native tongue. Many of the older Jewish people in these lands would also probably speak Yiddish, which resembles German in many ways. Of course, the first country would be Germany itself. There are now more than 120,000 Jewish people in Germany. They've returned to Germany in large numbers in recent years. Prior to World War II, Berlin, which is the capital, of course, was a major Jewish cultural center in Europe. And now, since the reunification of the two Germanys about 20 years ago after the Soviet Union fell, Berlin has once again become a thriving place for a Jewish community. Frankfurt and Munich also have large Jewish populations, and there are about 80 smaller Jewish communities scattered throughout the country. Many of these Jewish people arrived from the former Soviet republics, the Baltic states, and even from Russia and the Ukraine. A lot of them are young, well-educated, but most of them have little knowledge of Jewish tradition, having grown up, of course, entirely under communism for many years, where the practice of any religion was forbidden. These young Jews have nonetheless injected new life into the aging Jewish community in Germany. Prior to the rise of Adolf Hitler, the Jews of Germany were pillars of the society. They were successful people in all walks of life, including commerce, industry, art, and science, and the Jewish community was religiously very diverse. Of course, the reign of Hitler and his Third Reich ended all that, which makes it all the more miraculous that large numbers of Jewish people in recent years have been willing to return there. And now, of course, that makes Germany a Jewish mission field. We need someone who would be willing to go there and to reach the Jewish population for the Lord Jesus Christ with the gospel message. Another German-speaking country is Austria. Of course, it too was annexed by Hitler to the Third Reich. He was born there, in fact, and Jewish people also suffered greatly in that country. Austria has a Jewish community of more than 10,000 people, most of whom are located in Vienna. But Vienna boasted a huge Jewish community of nearly 180,000 prior to World War II. Many of those people were wiped out. Others fled the land. A large number of Jews from the former Soviet Republic of Georgia now have settled in Austria in recent years, since most did not want to remain in those countries where they had been brutally persecuted under communist regimes. There was also a history of persecution in Austria under the Habsburg Empire, but now, of course, there is freedom, and again, the Jewish people are quite reachable in the country of Austria, which is part of the European Union. There's also another sizable Jewish community in the German-speaking part of Switzerland, primarily in the city of Zurich, with about 8,000 Jewish people. While Jews were often accepted in the business and banking communities there in that country, there is a history of anti-Semitism. When Switzerland was founded in 1798, the Jews were defined actually as resident aliens. They were not granted citizenship until nearly 70 years later. During World War II, while 25,000 Jews found safety and protection in Switzerland, many more were delivered back into the hands of the Nazis after the Swiss government induced the Nazi regime to mark Jewish passports with a large letter J. There is much to be done to reach the Jewish communities in these German-speaking nations, and workers are certainly needed. We have one Mexican missionary currently on deputation to work in Switzerland, but it's a difficult country to access and to be able to stay there. So pray about that. Perhaps the Lord would lead you to one of these needy countries where there's a Jewish population that needs to be reached with the gospel. So if you're interested, please contact us at area code 423-876-8150. In any case, pray for laborers to be sent forth into the harvest. Now let's listen to Jewish believer Brother Mark Oshman with today's Bible message.
Thank you for listening to our radio broadcast. During this segment, we will look at the Jewish holiday known as Purim. Purim did not comprise one of the celebrations that God commanded the Jewish people to observe in the Bible. However, the holiday of Purim commemorated the deliverance of the Jewish people from a plot to exterminate them. The historical circumstances underlying this holiday appeared in the Book of Esther. During the 5th century B.C., King Ahasuerus of Persia promoted Haman the Agagite above all the other rulers in his kingdom. Haman was given to pride, and he grew very angry when Mordecai refused to bow down to him, as King Ahasuerus had commanded. When Haman learned that Mordecai was Jewish, he planned to get revenge against the Jews in general and against Mordecai in particular. Haman developed a scheme for doing so. He cast lots to determine a propitious day for executing his design. Haman chose the 12th day of the Jewish month of Adar, which is the 12th month on the Jewish calendar. He chose that day to carry out his plan, and from that practice the name Purim derives. It comes from the plural form of the Persian noun pur, which means lot. The date Haman selected, by the way, was 11 months later than the date he originally cast those lots. This afforded enough time to react and counteract Haman's scheme. He sought the king's approval of his scheme by emphasizing the differences between the Jews and other people in the Persian Empire. Haman asked the king for permission to destroy the Jews, and offered to pay King Ahasuerus 10,000 talents of silver for accomplishing that task. The monarch granted Haman's requests, issuing orders for his subordinates to kill those Jews living in his dominions and to seize their property. Upon learning about this news, Mordecai the Jew tore his clothes and dressed in sackcloth. He sent a message to Esther, informing her of that decree and asking her to intercede with King Ahasuerus. She replied that the king had not sent for her in 30 days. Moreover, she said, she risked death by approaching him without first being summoned by him. Mordecai rebuked her temerity, adding this statement, quote, "Who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" Unquote. Esther acceded to Mordecai's petition. She asked the Jews in Shushan to fast for 3 days, while she and her attendants did likewise. After those days had passed, Esther approached King Ahasuerus. The king held out to her his golden scepter, indicating that she could come to him without fear. She did so. He asked her what she wanted. Esther invited the king and Haman to 2 banquets of wine that she had prepared for them. At the second party, Esther revealed her Jewish identity for the first time. She begged King Ahasuerus to spare her life and the lives of the other Jews in the Persian Empire. When the monarch asked her who would plan such an indignity, she pointed her finger to Haman as the adversary. The angry king stormed out of the room and into the palace garden. Meanwhile, the frightened Haman pleaded with Esther for his life. Upon King Ahasuerus' return, he saw Haman lying on the bed where his queen was. Immediately, the enraged monarch thought that Haman intended to harm Esther. King Ahasuerus ordered his chamberlain Harbona to hang Haman on the gallows that the latter had prepared for Mordecai. That court official immediately carried out the royal sentence and hung Haman on those gallows. King Ahasuerus named Mordecai to replace Haman. When the Jews heard about Mordecai's ascent and Haman's downfall, they, quote, "had light and gladness and joy and honor," unquote. Many people amongst the Persians, in fear of the Jews, actually converted to Judaism at that time. King Ahasuerus granted Mordecai and Esther the authority to countervail his previous edict to destroy the Jewish people. One of the foundational principles of Medo-Persian jurisprudence was this: any royal decree, once issued, could not be changed. Mordecai and Esther got around that prohibition by allowing the original decree to stand, but also authorizing the Jews to defend themselves when attacked. When the fateful day arrived, the Jews' enemies gathered together to destroy them. The Jews gathered together to defend themselves. They overcame their foes, even though they didn't seize the property of their enemies. Moreover, the royal officials throughout the Medo-Persian Empire assisted the Jews, out of fear of Mordecai. Thus the Jewish people triumphed over their adversaries. They celebrated their deliverance by establishing the holiday known as Purim. In modern times, Jewish people still celebrate Purim. The holiday usually falls on the 14th day of the Jewish month of Adar, usually in March. Purim occurs the month before Passover does. At present, only the city of Jerusalem celebrates the 15th day of Adar as part of the Purim holiday. Preceding Purim is a day of fasting, known as the Fast of Esther. On that day, Jews remember Esther's 3 days of fasting before she approached the Persian king. From a Jewish perspective, the main commandment related to Purim related to listening to a public reading of the Book of Esther, done from a scroll known as a Megillah. Jews will hear the Megillah read or chanted on 3 occasions, during the evening Purim synagogue service, and the morning service, and the afternoon service. For some Jews, the significance of the Purim miracle warranted the additional recitals of the Megillah. Whenever the reader of the Megillah mentions the name Haman, those in attendance boo and hiss. They might also twirl noisemakers known as groggers. Why, some Jews will even write the name of Haman on their soles of their shoes, and they will stamp their feet to indicate their contempt of Haman. Why do Jewish people do this? They want to blot out the name of Haman, an allusion to a passage contained in the 25th chapter of Deuteronomy, where God commanded Israel to, quote, blot out the remembrance of Amalek, unquote. Agag was a king of Amalek, defeated by King Saul, according to the 15th chapter of 1 Samuel. The author of the Book of Esther identified Haman as an, quote, Agagite, unquote. That label has led some commentators to believe that Haman descended from the Amalekite king. On Purim, Jews offer a special prayer known as Al Hanisim, which means for the miracles. They utter this prayer during their evening, morning, and afternoon prayers. In the supplication, Jews thank God for the wonders that he worked for their ancestors, and for the redemption that he brought to them. The portion of the prayer relating to Purim mentioned how God thwarted Haman's plan to exterminate the Jewish people, and how God made it to backfire on Haman. Similar to Hanukkah, the festival of Purim has more of a national than a religious aspect to it. Although Purim is a holiday, it has lesser importance to the Jew than the 3 biblical feasts, namely Passover, the Feast of Weeks, and the Feast of Tabernacles. Thus, Jewish law allows a Jew to engage in manual labor during the holiday of Purim. During Purim, some Jews strive to get extremely intoxicated. According to the Talmud, a Jew is required to drink until he cannot tell the difference between the statements, cursed be Haman, and blessed be Mordecai. Jewish religious authorities have differed over the extent of intoxication needed to attain that particular condition. In addition, Jewish people also offer gifts of food and drink to each other. This practice emulates the response of their ancestors, a response that can be found in the Book of Esther. Jewish people make gifts out of food and drink in what they call shalach manas, literally the sending out of portions. Another major obligation for Jews at Purim involves eating festive meals. Eastern European Jews in particular often partake of a pastry known as hamantaschen, or Haman's pockets. Hamantaschen are triangular, fruit-filled cookies that purportedly depicted the 3-corner hat that Haman usually wore. Jews also celebrate Purim by giving to charities, another pattern established by the Jews in Esther's time. The giving of charity is considered a way of celebrating what God did for them during the Passover time. We've come to the end of our program about the holiday of Purim. Thank you for tuning in, and we invite you to return to listen to future radio broadcasts.
You've been listening to the Everlasting Nation broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. For more information, you can write us at P.O. Box 1386, Hickson, Tennessee, 37343, or call us at 423-876-8150, or you may also go online at ibjm.org. Until next time, may God bless and shalom.